This stock and commodity report is made possible with support from Bates Commodities in Normal. Bates Commodities can be reached at 1-800-383-4647 or on the internet at batescom.net.
From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report for March 15, 2013. This is Dave Dickey. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzalo of Global Commodity Analytics in Lafayette, Indiana. Also this half hour, we'll take a look at the cash grain market with Bruce Bostard of the Ludlow Co-op in Ludlow, Illinois. In agricultural news, Japan says it will join discussions for a Pacific trade pact. We'll have that and other stories. Also this half hour, Todd Gleason discusses best practices for taking soil samples. It's all on the Friday edition of the Closing Market Report.
Support for today's broadcast comes from ADM, now providing a new mobile site, FarmerView, for up-to-date futures, weather, market commentary, and local bids. Available at adm.com/farmerview.
Here are your last trades and settlements on this Friday afternoon in Kansas City May wheat. Last trades here, 750 and a half down 2 1/4. July at 754 and 3/4 down 1 1/2. Settlements over in the wheat pit at the Chicago Board of Trade, May at 723 down 1 3/4. July, 721 and a quarter up 1 1/4. Last trades in the corn pit, May corn, 716 and a quarter down 1/4. July, $7.75 up 2 1/4. December at 561 up 1 3/4. March of 14 at 571 up 2. May soybeans, last trades here too, 1424 and a half down 11. July, 1410 down 6. September, 1301 down a half. November, 1261 and a quarter down 1 1/2. Settlements in the soybean meal pit, May, 41880 down 620. July, 41320 down 510. May soybean oil, last trade here, 4985 up 51. And July at 5016 up 58. Last trades in all the livestock contracts, May, make that April live cattle, 125.70 down 235. March feeders, 136.67 and a half down 160. And April lean hogs at 79.62 and a half down 125. And those are your last trades and settlements in Kansas City and Chicago.
Agricultural programs are made possible by Auditory Care Center, an independent hearing care center serving Champaign, Piatt, Ford, Vermilion, and other East Central Illinois counties. Auditory Care Center offers hearing evaluations as well as selection, fitting, and repair of hearing aids at 892-5959 in Rantoul.
Looking at meteorologist Drew Lerner's weather forecast, he says a few more days of net drying are expected in the U.S. Delta. Southern portions of U.S. hard red winter wheat country will see very little rainfall over the next 2 weeks. A net loss in soil moisture is expected. Central Plains precipitation potentials have increased somewhat for the weekend. Rain and snow will occur in a couple of waves across the central, lifting topsoil moisture after today's heat wave. The moisture will help replenish topsoil moisture in portions of Nebraska, Kansas, and Colorado. Northern U.S. Plains precipitation will fall frequently over the coming week, and waves of precipitation in the U.S. Midwest over the next week to 10 days will maintain moisture abundance in the topsoil. Areas in northern and eastern Midwest will be the wettest.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Farm Credit of Illinois, dedicated to improving the quality of life for Illinois farmers by offering financial products and services geared specifically to the farm community and developing partnership-based relationships with its agricultural customers.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. This is Dave Dickey. Joining us now for a look at the futures market is Mike Zuzulow of Global Commodity Analytics in Lafayette, Indiana. Good afternoon, Mike.
Good afternoon, Dave.
At one point this afternoon, I went to do an update, and July, September, December, and March, and then as I was doing it, the May, they were all unchanged on the day. And then later in the day, when Sue Martin did her midday commentary, she said, you know what? And she used a highly technical term. She said, the corn market isn't doing squat.
Yeah, in the spirit of St. Patrick's Day, they were able to find mostly green in Chicago to finish up the day. And that was most prescient and most obvious in the corn. As expected, the weaker basis and the concerns growing on the planning weather brought the September and December to the forefront, I suspect, Dave, and that's probably why your bear spreads were, you know, mostly in control across the board when it came to both corn and beans. But for corn in particular, probably moved some corn on the rally earlier this week, and then the planning concerns are getting more and more significant. Dees corn hitting its best level since February 21, as traders that I spoke with in Chicago were talking about western and central Nebraska center pivots being turned on now before planting to try and get moisture into the ground as they get ready to get closer to the planting. So I think that's the first time I've heard in my career of pivots being turned on this time of year in anticipation of corn planting.
I think it would be a given because Nebraska, the western two-thirds, is essentially an extreme drought.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you look at this week's drought monitor that was put out, and you're looking at D4 drought in pretty much all of Nebraska until you get to the southeastern quadrant that's bordering the Kansas border. And, you know, it's pretty stark because that's a lot of corn country there and a lot of high-yielding corn country. Kind of goes back to what we talked about this morning, that as you see this weather pattern develop and the confidence levels increase by the meteorologists that we're going to turn off very cold again, and in the March 25th, March 26th time period, we're looking at 30, maybe 30 degrees below normal temperatures in the southern plains, and then that stretches to 10 to 25 degree below normal temperatures all the way across the Delta, Mid-South, Tennessee River Valley, Ohio River Valley, us in Illinois and Indiana. You start to get that more intact and more concrete, I think producers are going to start to be talking a lot more about how they're going to fare with both their planted acres and their yields and how both may get hit. And, you know, on that note, I was disappointed with Kansas City wheat today because we got midday weather updates that were drier and we continue to, you know, carry this colder than normal moisture level, but KC wheat didn't even finish positive on the day. So that was a little bit of a negative factor, I think, heading into the weekend.
Meanwhile, while you mentioned they were working the spreads in the soybean pit, the flat May price, boy, it got to down there to 24, and that there is a pretty important shelf of support. I would think you wouldn't want to go to the downside on that.
No, that's right. You've got a key February low right around 20.5, and if you take that out, then you're really looking at the January lows, another 30 cents lower. You know, you had talked about the crush report. I think that's really what drove the trade after mid-session, 136.3 million bushels for NOPA February crush, almost 10 million, almost 7 million, I should say, lower than the average trade guess, almost 10 million lower than what the lowest number was. I think maybe the only thing that saved us was that the oil stocks coming in at 2.79 billion pounds, very low end of trade guesses. And as I was talking to a Newswire colleague, he said, is this a bearish report? And I said, you can't say that because the oil stocks dropped more than the trade was expecting. And then that takes you back to the idea maybe the crush number was lower because the beans were not able to be sourced, because crush margins are very, very good right now, and I can't imagine that the crushers wouldn't be going after it. And the meal demand's been very, very good, both export and domestic. So I can't imagine crushers would have had a lower crush on weaker demand. That's probably more of a sourcing issue.
I think, in fact, if the May and July soybeans weren't doing as well as they were, 57 and 56 to the best, to the upside, you might have lost another dime in May soybeans.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think that ending or the oil stocks number being lower really kind of saved the day. The other thing that came out was that we did see the bean oil, you know, go up with the crude oil, you know, and get towards its daily highs after that report came out. So even though the product spread was not in the bull's favor, meaning that the meal was the weaker suit, I think it did help overall.
So the question is, when we come back next week and there will not be very many fundamentals to discuss, I mean, unless something just out of left field comes into this marketplace, there really is not a lot here between now and the end of the month when we get planning intentions and quarterly stock grain report. What will be traded, what will traders say are the most important things to look at between now and then?
I would rank it weather, exports, and then acreage and stocks, because I've already been getting hit on the email for sending in pre-estimates for the news wires on acreage and stocks. And so I think I saw Allendale's numbers come out today. They were at 96.9, beans 78.3, real close to where I'm at right now for my pre-survey mindset. I sent surveys out today. By the way, today is crop insurance deadline tonight at midnight, so producers need to be cognizant of that. But I try and send out a survey as we hit the crop insurance deadline, Dave, because I feel like it's a more firm number, whatever they send back to me. So I think next week you'll start to see more private trade guesses, and that'll be worked into the trade. But I would say weather, export demand, and then, you know, you still have looming out there on the radar screen the Chinese cancellation or non-cancellation of beans in case Brazil gets its act together logistically, and that refers back to the port strike. It's off for right now. It's not going to happen on the 19th, but will that come back into the forefront as well? So those are kind of the top five factors I'll be watching.
Well, let's look at number one in weather, and usually around this time of year, maybe a week or two later, maybe about this time of year, many people look at this weather pattern and say this is what sets up the trend for the spring. And it's been cooling a little bit on the wet side.
Yeah, and I think the cool side, too. This is where I talked to a client in Memphis, Tennessee, shortly before we went on the air, and I said, what's your pulse right now? Because you're one of those guys that really want to be planting. We saw Texas planting not far behind last year at all. In fact, average, right along the average ahead of last year, right along the average, and Louisiana right with the average of 20%. So I said to my guy in Tennessee, what's your temperature right now? He said, I'm not worried about anything. I've still got till the end of March to really look at things hard. The thing that bothers him is the fact that his soil temperatures, 4 inches down, are only running about 39 degrees. You talk about Champaign, Urbana, or Lafayette, you're talking about 32 or 33. That's going to get sticky if we stay cool and wet, because wetter soils also have a more difficult time heating up.
And if I recall, you want 54 or 56?
That's exactly right, with the idea that it's not going to go back below 50 at all. You know, you're on a trend going warmer, and by the time you put the seed in the ground, you're not going to be going backwards at all.
Thank you very much, Mike.
Hey, happy St. Paddy's Day. And, Dave, by the way, what's Irish and stays out all night long?
What is it?
Patio furniture. Take care, sir.
Thank you, sir. That's Mike Zuzolo of Global Commodity Analytics, and he is in Lafayette, Indiana.
Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333.
In agricultural news, Japan's prime minister announced today that Japan will join talks on a Pacific trade pact that would obligate the country to open up protected industries, including farming. The decision to seek participation in the U.S.-led Trans-Pacific Partnership, or TPP, is raising protests from farmers opposed to opening home markets to foreign competition. News reports today say that the government estimates that joining the Pacific Trade Agreement would boost Japan's GDP by as much as $31 billion a year. The federal budget proposal in the House of Representatives would cut $49 billion out of commodity and conservation programs. House Agriculture Committee Ranking Member Colin Peterson says the 2014 plan offered by Budget Chairman Paul Ryan, a Republican from Wisconsin, wants the Agriculture Committee to cut $31 billion out of commodity programs over the next decade and $18 billion out of conservation programs. The plan also would cut as much as $150 billion from nutrition programs. The continuing resolution under consideration by the Senate includes a provision that would require USDA to approve the sale and use of genetically modified seeds, even if a court has determined the environmental analysis for the seed is inadequate. The provision would require the Secretary of Agriculture to issue a temporary permit or declare temporary deregulated status for a GMO crop if a court invalidates or vacates USDA's approval of the crop. The temporary approval would allow growers to continue to buy and plant the seeds while an adequate environmental analysis is conducted. USDA plans to furlough meat inspectors for one day a week over the next 3 months of the fiscal year, starting in mid-July. The plan includes 11 total furlough days and is based on the Office of Management and Budget's estimate that USDA's Food Safety Inspection Service would have to cut $53 million under the budget sequester. Slaughterhouses would have to shut down on those furlough days. Four U.S. senators sent a letter to the U.S. Secretary of Agriculture yesterday requesting the agency provide details on loans made to domestic sugar processors. USDA is considering buying 400,000 tons of sugar in order to boost prices to keep processors from defaulting on government loans. The sugar would then be sold to U.S. ethanol producers, likely at a loss of $80 million. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. There is a right way to take a soil sample and a wrong way. Todd Gleason files this report.
The University of Illinois has long recommended farms be soil tested every 4 years. It helps producers understand the fertility of the land and what needs to be done to maintain and manage that fertility. The old standard for taking a test was to simply pull a spade full of dirt about 7 inches deep. That hasn't worked for a while, for about as long as the Mopar plow has been out of fashion. With a plow, ensured nutrients applied on the soil surface were mixed pretty evenly into the soil. No-till, conservation tillage, and strip-till have mostly eliminated that mixing process, says Fabian Fernandez from the University of Illinois. Now, the soil fertility specialist says it is a reason the way soil samples are taken has changed.
That's one of them. The other one is if you're banding the fertilizer, then you start to create these patterns of high and low fertility as you move across the field. When that happens, either one of these happens, you have to be really conscious of how you take a soil sample so that it will represent the fertility of that field.
So a banded fertilizer program, even a broadcast fertilizer program, requires soil samples be gathered in a much more precise way than in the past. 7 inches? It's not deep enough anymore, and a spade just won't do the job accurately enough.
It's not only the depth, but it is making sure that you represent each layer of that soil uniformly. If you use a spade, you need to make sure that typically what happens, we end up having a triangle, basically, when you take a soil sample with a spade, which will be wider on the surface and smaller in the subsurface. So the best option is to use a core, which will be a uniform diameter across.
The core should be 8 inches deep. The bottom end of the core should be low enough to compensate for the higher concentration of soil nutrients closer to the soil surface. Other than taking an 8-inch core, the rest of the soil sampling process is pretty much as usual, unless the fertilizer application has been banded. That one's a complete soil sampling game changer.
And when you're doing a subsurface band, you need to make sure that typically people are doing it between 6 and 8 inches. If you go 8 inches and you only take a 7-inch core, you will miss that fertilizer band, which basically will result in lower values than the actual. We are doing some work right now in trying to figure out how to take a soil sample that will represent the fertility of the field as a whole with a 6-inch depth application for this band. And what we are finding is that you need to, for every sample that you take in the fertilizer band, you need to take 2 or 3 samples outside of the band in the composite that you make. in order to represent that fertility.
If you're keeping track, that means those using subsurface banding for the fertilization program must pull 6-inch deep cores, not 8 inches deep. And for every sample site, one core in the band and 2 to 3 outside of the band. Here's one other note from Fabian Fernandez on soil fertility. He says there is no proof over many years and many trials that crops respond differently to banded fertilizer applications when compared to broadcast applications. It's just a lot more expensive to put fertilizer in a subsurface band. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.
Joining us now on the telephone to talk about cash grain is Carolyn White of the Andersons, and she is in Champaign, Illinois. Good afternoon, Carolyn.
Good afternoon.
Thank you for filling in for us on short notice. It is
you bet.
Most appreciated. We were having a debate among some of our analysts the other day and even back here at the radio station in our department about going forward over the next 30 to 60 days, if there is heavy lifting to be done in the corn market, is it more likely that that lifting would be done in futures, or will it be more likely to be done in basis? What do you think?
That is interesting. I guess today I'm kind of feeling like it might be more in futures. I don't know. Maybe it's kind of a half and half thing. I kind of typically look for the basis levels to get better, you know, as we get into the summer months. And I don't know, maybe it is going to be all the futures that just kind of stay stagnant, but it will be an interesting one for sure.
So what do you think? I mean, we're already at some incredible levels. Everybody knows that. But everybody's dreaming about how far, what kind of a difference we might see between futures and basis and, say, the July corn contract eventually. What do you think we might eventually see?
July on the board?
On the board.
I don't know. I maybe $7.50. I know I've even heard some $8, but I'm not sure I'm in that camp. I think, if anything, you know, we probably have certainly a good 30 cents or so. That would be $7.30. We closed right at $7.25 today. I don't know. I mean, I guess I feel like what we have left, how will that, you know, suffice for end users?
Does the Andersons do you guys have wheat over there?
Yes, we do. We take wheat.
What do you make of the inverse that we're seeing in the futures in the wheat market?
Oh, wheat is, I mean, no more wheat than we do in here. 7.23 on the board here. That's May. July is 7.21 versus next year, 7.44.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's go ahead and get your prices in today, please.
You bet. Corn right now for delivered here at the Andersons for March, 7.47. New crop is 5.45. Soybeans for March, 14.47. New crop, 12.36. Wheat for July, 7.01.
Thank you much, Carolyn.
You bet. You have a great weekend.
You too. That's Carolyn White of the Andersons, and she is in Champaign, Illinois. Capistrano may have their swallows, but Hinckley, Ohio has turkey buzzards. They return to the town each year on or about this same date for the summer. They winter in Dade County, Florida. On this day in agricultural history in 1858, Liberty Hyde Bailey was born. An American horticulturalist, he helped create the science of horticulture, made systematic studies of cultivated plants, and was a recognized authority on plant pathology and agriculture. He made special studies of blackberries, grapes, cabbages, and squashes. Bailey served as Dean of Agriculture at Cornell University for 15 years. In 1889, Melvin Reuben Bissell died. Bissell invented the carpet sweeper in 1876. The inner workings and cases were made by women working in their homes. Tufts of hog bristles were bound with string dipped in hot pitch, inserted in brush rollers, and finally trimmed with scissors. In 1980, McDonald's test marketed Chicken McNuggets in Knoxville, Tennessee. The chicken nugget was invented in the 1950s by Robert Baker, a food science professor at Cornell University. And in 1998, Edwin Shoemaker died, an American inventor and engineer. He created the recliner chair and founded the Lazy Boy Furniture Company. And that's this day in agricultural history. Listening to the Closing Market Report. This is Dave Dickey. Joining us now with a look at agricultural weather is John Davis of Chesapeake Energy. He is in Chicago, Illinois. Good afternoon, John.
Well, good afternoon, Dave.
Thank you for filling in on short notice. It's much appreciated.
Sure.
I was looking at the drought map this last Thursday, I guess yesterday, and I guess we can officially say, except for about where you live, Illinois is out of drought, right?
Well, it all depends on what angle you're going for in that assessment. If you're talking about topsoil moisture and short-term moisture deficits, there's no question. From a topsoil moisture standpoint, the improvement that we've seen, which has really occurred much of this year, the calendar year, since January 1st, you know, we've seen major improvements in the moisture situation. From a subsoil moisture standpoint, however, certainly you've gone the right direction. And you have seen an improvement in the overall situation. But if you ask the question, have you made up the deficits from the drought of last year, the answer to that is no. That will take many more months of abundant precipitation to fully make up those deficits. So it all comes down to what angle you're looking at there. Short-term or more topsoil moisture, yes, that's correct. We have made up the deficits. Subsoil moisture, we're going in the right direction. But those deficits have not been made up.
So that means that even though it is wet now, for a good corn crop to be raised in the eastern corn belt, we will need timely rains throughout the summer.
Sure, which is normally the case, but probably more so the case in years like, you know, last year especially. And you're looking ahead to this year, that will likely still be the case this year, sure.
Turn your attention to the trend. It is the time of year that people begin to try to guess what the spring trend or the spring weather pattern will be right around the 1st of March. Are you seeing anything begin to set up yet?
Well, at this stage of the game, the impressive thing right now is how persistent and stable the pattern is across the Central West. It is a cold pattern. It is a wet pattern. There is no sign of a break in that, at least into the early portion of April. So we have another 2 or 3 weeks of cold and wet conditions across the middle portion of the country. That in itself isn't any kind of a major problem, but sometime during the month of April, you kind of have to see that pattern break somewhat, both from a soil temperature standpoint as well as from a standpoint of, you know, workable fieldwork operations to get to a level where you have on-time planting and on-time fieldwork preparation. We do think as we look ahead toward the month of April that that pattern will break at some point during the month. Is that April 9th or is that April, 26th? You don't know that right now. But there are indications out there that the pattern will break, and when that breaks will be very important in how rapid or not fieldwork operations and early planting for corn will be.
Thank you, John.
My pleasure, Dave.
That's John Davis at Chesapeake Energy, and he is in Chicago, Illinois. And that is today's Closing Market Report. Remember to tune into Commodity Week. You can do that tomorrow morning at 11:30 Central Time on WILL, or you can do it right now. Go to our website at willag.org. The show is already posted. This is Dave Dickey.